Welcome to this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Amy. In this episode, we're going into trauma physiology that can transform how we understand and treat mood disorders and mental health symptoms. In this episode, I'll be sharing the story of Michelle, a 42-year-old elementary school teacher who came to me with a simple yet common and profound complaint. I don't feel like myself anymore. Everything feels overwhelming. And as we unpack her experience in this episode, you'll learn how trauma continues on in the body and how standard treatments often miss the underlying physiological patterns. You'll discover the 5-step universal trauma response that every human body follows from the startle to the shutdown, and how recognizing these patterns can completely change our approach to treatment when we can see them. We'll explore why the body gets stuck in what I call the body trauma loop, the impact of that on our biology and how it creates the configuration of symptoms we often put labels on as anxiety, ADHD, depression, chronic fatigue, or whatever other label you may have had. Whether you are a practitioner working with patients or clients experiencing unexplained symptoms yourself, or someone who's worried about your family and trying to help them. This episode offers an understanding of how trauma is not just about what happened, but how your body responded to what happened. Let's jump in. I am delighted to be going over trauma biology with what I believe is fundamental to understanding how best to serve those with mood and mental health symptoms. I want to talk to you about Michelle. Michelle is a 42-year-old elementary school teacher, and she came to me with the chief complaint of, I'm not myself anymore. Everything feels overwhelming. Now, that word means something to me, and I'm going to share with you what that word means in terms of our internal states. But Michelle presented with this progressive worsening of multiple symptoms over the past 2, 3, 4 years. It had started so subtly, it was hard for her to remember when it first started, but it just sort of started with fatigue. And it showed up in the fact that she was always very athletic and exercised a lot. And then she just one day noticed that, you know, I'm not doing my regular runs. I find it hard to get to the gym. I have to push myself. And I used to be excited to go to the gym. And she started to withdraw from social activities, finds herself unable to engage emotionally as much with her students, just feels this disconnect and this distance. And yet she's always been a very passionate educator and loves her students. She also described this growing sense of brain fog, finding it hard to do everyday tasks because it just feels, everything feels hard. It feels like she's having to push herself through mud. Now, it wasn't just that. As we explored deeper, she had some digestive issues, some constipation. She had some muscle tension, felt like she could always use a massage. She was always tired and yet had trouble sleeping. She'd, of course, seen multiple specialists. She'd seen her family doctor many times. They'd run all the tests. Everything seemed relatively normal. And so she had been diagnosed with anxiety and depression and started on mood medications. She had been started on Wellbutrin and Zoloft. Those didn't seem to help. Doses were increased. That didn't seem to help. Now she's having the side effects. And so she was switched to Lexapro. But she just is still not feeling like herself, doesn't know what to do. As she came to me, I asked some questions, and I'm looking through her files, and it tells me that she has this trauma biology. So I'm going to start looking for patterns. And when I ask about, have there been any significant life events, especially leading up to this, that you can remember? She initially responded, nothing major. I've had a pretty normal life. And yet then digging deeper, as is often the case with my patients, they don't think that they've had trauma, but as we dig deeper, she had a significant car accident 2 years prior to her really noticing her symptoms. But she had also had her mother pass away suddenly from a heart attack 6 months prior to that car accident. And then as I asked about her relationship with her family, it came out that she had an alcoholic father and experienced a lot of emotional neglect in her childhood. But she followed up all of this by saying, everyone has problems. No one has a perfect life. That was a long time ago. That has nothing to do with this. And yet I'm seeing the three survival strategies that I'm going to share with you about the trauma state, the disconnection, the immobilization, the energy conservation. And when we can recognize these trauma patterns, it allows us to bring in other tools that we might not think of bringing in. So let me share with you the universal trauma response, because it gives us these trauma survival strategies that then become our biology. Now, this universal trauma response really reflects the changes in our inner state, our physiology. So literally our physiological states. And they change based on our environment, based on what's demanded of us. And when we understand that, we can watch and follow the body through the sequence of steps that it takes to go through a stress and into the trauma response. Now, the benefit of this is that you can better identify what your patients are in right now in terms of their physiology, and it can help you identify the events in their lifetime that weren't just stressors. They would have been a trauma for their body. Trauma. Yeah, there's a lot of stigma around this word. What is it? How do we actually define it? Especially as we are looking at it through the lens of mood and mental health symptoms. Trauma has so long been identified by the event, what happened to you, or what didn't happen to you. Or maybe we split it up into the big T's, the big T traumas. But now we've got this category of the little T traumas. But at the end of the day, it is not about the event. It is about how the body responds to that event. So that two people can be standing side by side and they experience the same event. And one of them experiences it as a stress and the other person experiences it as a trauma. Same event, but what defines a trauma is how the body responds internally. So that it is what happens inside of us as a result of our environment. And as we will see, that includes both our internal environment as much as our external environment. So that every human body, regardless of culture, age, background, ethnicity, it follows the same instinctual five-step sequence when experiencing stress and then what will become a trauma. Understanding this sequence provides us the roadmap for understanding, assessing, and treating patients whose symptoms may be rooted in unresolved trauma responses. And it also gives us a roadmap for recognizing the difference between stress physiology and trauma biology to know where our patient is right now. Are they in stress physiology right now? Or are they in trauma biology right now? Because those two inner states need very different things. They're almost opposite in their inner physiology. And so it allows us to meet them where they're at and actually give their body what it needs right now to shift into a place of safety. So let's jump in. Let's take a look at this universal trauma response and the steps that the body takes with its physiology to go into and through a stress all the way into a trauma. Now we have the five steps, and these five steps are sequential, meaning there's no skipping of the steps. And each step is going to be a very defined moment as we go along. So the five steps are startle, stress, hitting the wall, we freeze, and then we shut down. Let me go through those steps again. There's an initial startle. We experience a stress response next. If we hit the wall, then our body freezes, and then it shuts down. The freeze and the shutdown are both part of the trauma response, and so hitting the wall is what initiates or triggers a trauma response inside of our body. It is what defines whether we will stay in stress physiology or trauma biology. So let's take a look at the startle. The startle is when it's a brainstem-mediated reflexive response, when our nervous system detects a potential threat. It is that moment when you're realizing, something might be wrong. I don't know, but something might be wrong. And it's mediated through the sympathetic nerve chain that runs down our spine. And it's the rapid release of noradrenaline that is pre-stored in our tissues, which allows for that characteristic jolt or jump or startle that is beyond our conscious control. It happens so fast, we don't think about it, and it is not something that we can hold in or control. Now, the purpose of this step is to give us a running energy surge for assessing the danger and for then taking action. So we are at the startle, and now we are going to go into the stress step. Now, the stress is when our nervous system confirms that there is danger. It can do this through a number of ways. I talk about this in my book, The Biology of Trauma, where there are different triggers that will tell our nervous system this is a real danger. It's in chapter one. And from there, we move into the stress response, what we typically would call the fight or flight response. This is a high energy state. It mobilizes all of our systems to be able to create energy and fast. The stress response is the equivalent to a sprint with one goal: overcome the threat. Physiologically, what is happening is that this is the adrenaline release. Cortisol is not even online yet. So cortisol is actually not the stress hormone. Adrenaline is. Cortisol comes in later. It comes in 15 minutes, really starts to peak at 15, 20 minutes after adrenaline. So we have this initial adrenaline surge that is what gives us the energy because it helps our cells create more energy. It makes it more efficient. It uses the glucose in order to be able to make energy more efficiently and make more of it. Turns on all the mitochondria in our cells. So with this adrenaline, our heart rate increases, our breath rate increases, our blood glucose goes up in order to be sending that glucose to all of our cells. And the energy, our blood flow is diverted to our muscles and our brain where we need it most to be able to make quick decisions and run and fight. With this immediate increase in metabolism, this is a sprint, not a marathon. And it's a sprint that I have to win. It's not just a sprint for fun. If this is a real danger, I have to overcome this. I can't get second place or at least just finish and cross the line. This is a sprint that I have to win, and the body responds in kind. It is a full-on sprint to win in order to live. Thus, because of how much energy that takes to put into that kind of a sprint, this is unsustainable. A body cannot sprint for that long, cannot sprint forever, which is why then acute stress then becomes something else. And that is when we hit the wall. And we can hit the wall for a number of reasons. Again, I go into more detail in my book in chapter one, but the wall represents trapped and powerless. It's the pivotal moment that changes everything. Because if I'm trapped, if I'm powerless, why am I going to continue running or fighting or taking action? It's better for me to stop taking action because it's useless now. It's pointless. And me using up my energy actually further compromises my ability to survive. And so it triggers an immediate interchange in our physiology. This is what will induce a trauma response, hitting the wall. It represents, again, that internal experience of feeling powerless and trapped. In the words of Bessel van der Kolk, he talks about it being a moment that feels unbelievable. I can't believe this is happening. Unbearable. It creates pain, not physical pain, emotional pain that feels unbearable to be trapped and powerless. and it's overwhelming. When we hit the wall, it triggers a different survival strategy in our body, in our inner physiology. And this is more powerful than our prefrontal cortex. So no longer is our prefrontal cortex going to be running the show and trying to find our way out. There is no way out. We've hit the wall. We're powerless and we're trapped. One way that you can recognize this if your patients are telling you a story is you listen for phrases like, "There was nothing that I could do." Maybe they even may say the words, "I felt trapped." But there's this element of, there's nothing else that I can do. I've done my best and my best was not good enough. And this is what marks the transition to the trauma response. And there are the two steps that are part of the trauma response then. Very unique physiology in this trauma response. So now we have gone from stress physiology, but we've got to switch survival strategies. And that's the trauma biology. It's a completely different physiology. However, it is still for the main purpose of survival. So let's look at these two steps. This is the freeze and the shutdown. The freeze is this unique moment where it is the physiology of the sympathetic fully online. It's the sympathetic fully online, but it's now the dorsal parasympathetic fully online. It is the equivalent in a car of having your foot all the way down on the accelerator and the emergency brake all the way on. You have both the brake and the gas on at the same time. And not just halfway on, all the way on, both of them. But the brake is more powerful than the accelerator. And so we don't move. And that's why it's called the freeze. Now, the freeze is this moment where it's the shock of hitting the wall. And because there's still so much sympathetic energy from the adrenaline, there is this transition moment where all of our muscles lock up to prevent us from moving and taking action and wasting more of our energy. But there is this element of slowing things down and freezing. So it's high panic, the highest inner panic, because I've just realized that I'm powerless and I'm immobilized. I'm trapped. I can't do anything. Now, this may not be actually what happens on the outside. We may still be doing some form of action. I think of many examples, many stories, even that of my grandfather, as he was in the death march in Armenia as a young boy, and having just had his grandparents killed in front of him, he was forced to walk. He was not allowed to stop and process what had just happened. He's in a complete freeze. He's in a daze, but his body is still moving. And that is part of this trauma response, is that there is this disconnect and we do things just in a daze. It's the deer in the headlights moment. That's what you want to think of in the freeze. And many of your patients may describe a moment when they remember feeling like a deer in the headlights, frozen, even though that may not be what happened on the outside, it's how they felt on the inside. And of course, that's what's key, right? Is the inner experience of the body. So the freeze is this remarkable physiology that nothing is like this. It is the combination simultaneous of the sympathetic adrenaline energy surge and the full-on break of the dorsal parasympathetic. There's more on that in the polyvagal theory founded by Dr. Steve Porges. And this is also when we can have the full inhalation. And so if you imagine a shock moment is when we inhale and it's caught. So it's like, and then our breath gets caught. So that's the freeze. The freeze is that moment of full inhale in a shock, and we get caught there in that moment. What happens next is predictable, because how long can we have that full inhale and just hold our breath? Our body again has to move into, well, I've got to keep you alive. And that is what the trauma biology is then. And this next step is called the shutdown. And it is where the survival strategy is stay alive, but barely alive, because I need to conserve energy. So metabolically, we go into an energy conservation. We still have this aspect of immobilization, which is why it feels hard to move. We don't want to be in the spotlight. We don't want to be seen. And there's this element of disconnection, because when the body's in that trauma state, that is one of the, I want to say, the major mechanisms by which it protects us from feeling the full reality and the pain, is to disconnect us. You can think of it as the endorphins that get released in order to not feel the pain of something. And that's exactly what happens in the body when it goes into the trauma response. So those are the survival strategies of that shutdown. And that shutdown is the last and final step of the trauma response. This is when no longer the sympathetic is dominant. This is now dorsal parasympathetic being dominant. And it employs the survival strategies, again, of dissociation or disconnection, creating distance, creating the immobilization or stopping us from moving. That's why it feels really hard to do things. Sometimes it feels really hard to move. And part of that is also from the energy conservation, that because our body is preserving energy, it doesn't want to do anything but the bare basics. A telltale sign that we can recognize that our patients are in this trauma state is by watching their breath. And when their breath is slow and shallow, in fact, sometimes I've had a hard time seeing, like, are they actually taking a breath? Because there's barely any movement, and there should be. And so that is one way that we can recognize, their body is employing these three survival strategies of that shutdown: the dissociation or disconnection, the immobilization, and the energy conservation. And there's going to be a whole host of other symptoms that come with this trauma state. And so when we understand that this is how the body goes through an acute trauma response in the moment, this is what's happening in an acute trauma response. We have these five steps. It starts with the startle. It then goes into the stress. It then happens to hit the wall where we become powerless and trapped. And then we fall into the freeze and then the shutdown. When that happens, this is an acute response, meaning in the moment response. But most people do not give their bodies what it needs in order to complete this response. And that is how it becomes chronic. And what that means is that an event that happened long ago can start to create this trauma biology that builds and builds and builds, accumulates over years, decades, and it results in adult chronic health conditions. We know this from the adverse childhood experiences that are literally associated with all forms of adult chronic health conditions. It's the accumulation of one's physiology being stuck in the danger states. And so one's physiology loops between the stress danger and then the trauma danger. And this is where there's always that sense of danger, but it can loop between what looks like anxiety and then depression. It can loop between what feels like or looks like anger and then the letdown and the shame and the shutdown. So that cycling between stress and overwhelm, or this is the trauma biology, the shutdown, right? Stress and shutdown, sometimes all in the same day, that a person is going between stress, high energy, and shutdown. It creates imbalances in our biochemistry that escalate over time, ending up creating many of the mental, emotional, and physical health symptoms that they come and see practitioners for. This is how it becomes one's chronic state and one's dis-ease in all the ways that it presents. And so one always feels in a sense of danger. And when I ask them, that's what they will tell me. Like, there's always just this background sense of, I don't know if I'm okay. I don't think I'm going to be okay. Even if nothing is wrong right now, something bad might happen. I'm just waiting for the next shoe to drop. So there's always this background sense of insecurity. And this is what either has them in stress physiology or the shutdown physiology. And it can become predominant. Oftentimes, they get stuck more in that stress physiology first. And that's when they have the anxiety, the hypervigilance, the panic attacks, the insomnia. And when they're in the shutdown state, and this happens more and more over time because the body cannot sustain that stress physiology, that's when we see more of the fatigue, the depression, the syndromes, chronic pain, fibromyalgia, even autoimmunity. And they start to feel disconnected from others. They start to show these patterns in their relationships. I talk about there being three levels that we can find these patterns when the body is stuck in this loop between stress and overwhelm. In their life in general, in their relationships, and in their physical and mental health. Because over time, this is the result of trauma biology. There is no other result. Trauma biology compounded over time creates disease. And so we can look at these patterns. And that's what I want to share with you, right? It's the patterns that I'm looking at that helps me know what to do. And when I can look at the patterns and I can see the pattern of energy conservation, I can see the pattern of immobilization, just not moving forward, whether in life and relationships or signs of that in their physical health or in their thought process, not being able to move through things, not being able to move through grief, for example. That's a form of immobilization. The disconnection can often be one that is easier to identify. How connected do they feel with others? How connected do they feel with themselves? But recognizing these patterns, really, we want to look at the underlying trauma biology, because that's where we can then have leverage points for changing how their inner state is stuck and be able to avoid some of these things, like just prescribing medications that aren't really addressing the inner physiology. The medications are addressing one aspect of trauma biology, which are imbalances in the neurotransmitters. That is one aspect of a trauma biology, but that is not the only aspect, because since it is our physiological state, it affects everything. It's not going to just affect one area of our body or our mind. It's going to drive all of our disease, all of our systems, all of our tissues, because it is the physiological state. It's the operating state. And we want to be helping shift people into the ventral vagal state, the ventral parasympathetic state, where no matter what health conditions you have, you are in your best health and you are your best self. So to wrap up this section, I want to share with you the correlations between the trauma biology and so many of the symptoms that we see in our patients. And these, to me, reveal that biology, reveal that this is a state. Referring back to this shutdown state, and how does this play out? In everyone with trauma biology, there has been this element of brain fog to different degrees, but brain inflammation, because of primed microglia, is a big part of the trauma response of the body. It's a big part. The immune system and the nervous system are so connected that going into a trauma response of freeze and shutdown is so impactful on the immune system that it activates primed microglia. And we know from research that brain inflammation has been associated with depression, with anxiety, with PTSD. We can look at the HPA axis. Now, I know that I was taught, and you were likely taught as well, that cortisol is the big problem in stress. It is not. It is the adrenaline. The adrenaline is what drives cortisol. Again, I have this all laid out in my book, That would be in chapter five, where I talk about the whole body response to trauma. And let's take our focus off of cortisol per se, even though the research does show abnormalities, but that's part of the point is that it has shown high levels and low levels of cortisol. It shows that it's all over the place, which can help us know that that's not where our focus should be. We want to actually be looking at the adrenaline and the inner state, the adrenaline, and are they in the shutdown state that it's overpowering the adrenaline. But we know that gut microbiome disruption is common in all psychiatric conditions. Mitochondrial dysfunction is a big part of the shutdown state, and it is common in depression and chronic fatigue. The oxidative stress markers are a big part of trauma biology, and they are elevated across psychiatric conditions. We also have the correlation of these syndromes and other conditions that are associated with trauma biology. And so fibromyalgia has a greater than 50% comorbidity with depression and anxiety. This is not a coincidence. This is the root of the inner state, the inner physiology state that's going to drive both. They're connected. They're just symptoms of the same phenomenon, which is the nervous system stuck in that body trauma loop and cycling between stress state and shutdown state. The chronic fatigue syndrome shows high rates of depression, chronic back pain with depression. Here's the immune system. Chronic inflammation correlates with depression severity. Mast cell activation is a big part of trauma biology. Histamine, big part of trauma biology. And it frequently presents with anxiety and brain fog. These are all so connected. You can't separate them. The nervous system is what drives all of this. And so we need to be able to recognize the state of the nervous system, and is it in stress state or is it in this trauma response? And how long ago did this trauma response start that it would have compounded all of this biology? The autoimmune conditions are associated, and of course the GI disorders, IBS, 90% comorbidity with anxiety and depression, and functional GI disorders are strongly correlated with trauma history. So as we come back to our patient, Michelle, and we see, do we see any trauma patterns? Yes, we see the trauma patterns. We see it in her physical health conditions, the fatigue, the GI issues, the sleep issues, but we also see it in her relationships and her feeling disconnected from life and from her students. We see the patterns, and now we're going to look for, well, why is her body stuck in this body trauma loop? Because that is not how the body was designed. We need to look for the underlying reasons for why her body has gotten stuck in this body trauma loop and going into the trauma response so that then we can do something about it. Once we understand what is keeping the body stuck, we can apply the right repair tools, and then the body is able to do so much by itself when it has what it needs. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. As we've seen, recognizing trauma patterns in our bodies can be the first important step. Because remember, trauma is not defined by the event itself, but by how our bodies responded, what happened inside of us, and how our physiology adapted to preserve our life. These adaptations from the disconnection, immobilization, and energy conservation, while protective, when they become stuck and persistent, those become the patterns that make us sick. If you'd like to learn more about all of this and even start your healing journey or go deeper with a missing piece that has been for your journey, I have resources for you in the show notes. I will include my guide to the steps to identify and heal trauma. This is a roadmap for even how to identify, is my body holding trauma? If you're a practitioner, how would I know that someone that I'm working with, that their body is still holding onto these trauma patterns? And then what to do about that? The simple steps, the essential sequence. This is great for anyone who wants to understand trauma in the body better. I do have a specific sequence, well, the guide on the essential sequence. This is a free guide, and it shows you the difference between stress and trauma responses. And once we have trauma in our body, what are those three steps in this sequence that are the phases of the trauma healing journey? Because we need to safely open that up. Please do not just go in, jump in, dive in when you have stored trauma in your body. It needs to be opened up safely and gently. I do have my Biology of Trauma book out. You can go to biologyoftrauma.com to join the Insider Circle and to get information about pre-ordering it. And I have some related podcast episodes if you enjoyed this one. Episode 29 was on what is the physiology and neurobiology of the trauma response. Episode 32 you'll want to check out, which are what are the ways the body communicates stored trauma. There's a YouTube video of understanding trauma responses in your body that I'll have a link to as well. With that, I am here to save you time and money by bringing you practical information that will help you accelerate the trauma healing journey. So please take a moment to subscribe or leave a review if you have already subscribed. Your reviews and feedback are how I know how to improve this podcast, bring you great content, and help others find the information that could change their lives as well. I'm your host, Dr. Amy. Until next episode, lots of love.